7:34 on Wednesday, June 26th. I'm Commissioner Brian Crosius, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchek and Commissioner Randy Crispin, as well as
Conrad Crockford, staff.
Stacey Ebrill, staff.
And this is a work session on the UGPTI draft of the annual commodity traffic report. It is Commissioner Fedorchek's portfolio, and I don't have any opening comments, assuming. Do you have any opening comments?
I do not either.
Crispin? Okay. And then Commissioner Fedorchek, it's all yours.
So we don't probably need to spend a ton of time on this, but I did want to have more than just the type of conversation available during discussion in a meeting to talk about this report. It's data that the railroads are required to provide to us, and then Denver and his team at UGPTI have collected it and tried to put it in somewhat of a useful form. Really why I wanted us to talk is to try to determine if there is a better format, that if we want this information analyzed in a different way, Denver would like that kind of feedback, provided in a different way, and is there a place that we should be who should we share this with? It's good data. Is there, you know, where should we put it on the website, and how should we share this? Who should we share it with? So that's why I just wanted to spend a few minutes digging into those questions and having a discussion about it. So with that, Conrad, can you get the background as to what triggers the data arriving here, or maybe you even know, Randy. Why do we get this stuff? Why do we get this info?
The North Dakota Century Code requires the railroads to file a report with the commission on an annual basis. And the nature of that report and the items included in that report are subject to the commission to be able to effectively regulate the remainder of regulatory authority we have over the railroads. And so that's how the report, that's the initial impetus for requiring or having them file this information. And it's helped us with certain things as far as we've just looked at freight traffic that's traveled on a particular line through the state. Additionally, you know, it helps us keep a lookout as far as their track miles and if they've got, you know, any additional infrastructure they're adding, or sometimes they'll put in there the projects that they're doing. But there's really been no analysis done on the reports that they file. We just continue to have them file the reports. So this would be one of the items that I would think would be most useful that we can extract from their reports. Over the last few years, we've had requests from different government agencies, also grad students doing research projects that are interested in understanding a little bit more about North Dakota freight traffic volumes, particularly since the oil boom kicked off and we had a large increase of crude by rail. Granted, that's tailored off, but to this point, to my knowledge right now, nobody within the state does anything as far as analyzing the freight traffic that's coming in and transported through North Dakota, in addition to what's leaving the state as well.
So do we tell them what to report on?
We can direct the railroads.
But do we? What are they basing the how do they know what to tell us?
They've been basing it off of, I don't think we have anything specifically written down as far as these are the things we're interested in. It's been maybe established in the past historically as far as what they've, okay. And then looking at the reports year over year, it's been the same. Now, the difference is for the short line railroads, we do have a form that they fill out that they're going to talk about the number of miles of track that they maintain, the number of locomotives and the cars shipped as far as what they shipped origin and what they've brought into the state destination-wise, and that comes into either reported by the number of car loads and also in the tons capacity as well. So what commodities they're tracking. And then so the class ones are similar to that as well.
Okay.
And it's always my understanding, but I'm not positive of this anymore either. Sort of my understanding that this evolved and it comes to us. We share it with Upper Great Plains.
The data.
and they really do all the analysis. And but then we're one stakeholder of using it, but they have many, you know.
I don't think so.
I don't.
The DOT relies on, like, where do you need a highway widened because of some amount of traffic going? And I think there's others who use this.
Well, the only reason why I say I don't know how much UGPTI even uses it is that they have been kind of taking a while to get through this analysis, and they are like, well, here it is. How do you want to use it? Am I wrong, Conrad?
No, I'd say that's correct. I mean, all this information, nothing in here is confidential. It's publicly available through our website if they go in and search the railroad report. So if there's anybody going in and pulling that information out, we're not going to necessarily know if someone's doing that on their own. But as far as some of the freight traffic data, this is specifically something that we've been working on with Upper Great Plains for the last year, specifically generating something along the lines of what is our traffic volumes that are transported, that originate, terminate, and transported through the state. So I think that that's the impetus for working on something like this and providing the information.
But the other hard data is out there on our website.
The hard data is, yes. It's not been processed into, you know, it's not been combined so that you can see what a, you know, statewide picture looks like on it. Did that answer your question, Commissioner? And if there's additional resources that they use out of some of those railroad reports, I'm not too sure if there's other resources they provide on that. I know some of the other information that we have is the grain movement and storage reports. That also identifies how grain has been shipped out of the state via, you know, they track, you know, whether it's over-the-road trucking or if it's shipped by rail and then to what general region of the country, whether it's the Pacific Northwest, into the Duluth, Superior area. So that's another area that I know that they do some data crunching on that.
And will we continue to get that information now after the grain licensing change?
The information, I'm sure, will still be available to us.
Upper Great Plains, but it won't come through.
Right, it won't
us.
Come to us anymore. No, and typically the information isn't coming directly through us anymore. We host an electronic form on our webpage that companies will then go into and put their pertinent information in there. And when they click submit, it actually goes directly to Upper Great Plains.
Yeah.
So realistically, we're really not involved in that circle too much anymore anyway. And then via their website, they've got a lot of this information available. We haven't, you know, is through Upper Great Plains publishes it right on their website, and then we can link to that stuff as well.
So we just ask them to analyze it further.
Correct. They provide the analysis on it, and they compile it all for the number of entities that submit that data.
Conrad, you emailed this, right?
I believe so.
It would have been a long time ago.
It would have been a while ago, and it was also provided during the meeting, but we can get another copy of it if you...
It was provided at the last meeting, because we discussed this at
last commission meeting.
Do
you want to...
So I guess the question is, do we need them to do this? Do we want them to compile it? I mean, it's extra work for them to do this. Do we want the data analyzed on an annual basis? And if so, what are we going to do with it? Who should we share it with? It seems like the Commerce Department comes to mind as, you know, maybe Justin Kringstad comes to mind too, just because he's all about transportation, DOT.
Right, the rail sector at least.
You know, maybe I'm just a little sensitive after the grain program was moved, and now someone doesn't like our decision on a siting case, and maybe I'm just sensitive to deferring because it seems like we are really good team players. And I don't think we always get the same consideration on, well, let's include the the PSC. In some instances, yes. And I'm not saying let's protect this, but you know, in terms of, okay, is this a valuable report? And I do remember looking at it, but I want to see it more specifically again. You know, in terms of how is it communicated to the general public, I mean, these useful numbers that we can actually apply to rail safety in terms of the so what factor, which is, you know, you show someone a report or they have access to it, and really from a public standpoint, it's so what? What does it mean to me? Is there, you know, if there are ways we utilize data like the, you know, even small parts of the data to, as a measurement, from a safety aspect, then it's good. You know, when you get into commerce, then I would agree you've got the commerce department, and it's good information. But I still think there are elements in terms of having it present on our website that are good.
Well,
there's a lot of rail traffic,
and
it shifts, and you know, there's hazardous materials, and we have inspectors. Reinforces the rail safety inspection program that help enhance public safety.
And now I'm not positive how much of an effort this is on behalf of Upper Great Plains as opposed to what they're doing with the information anyway.
I don't know either, but they worked on this report and came up with this template, so they weren't doing this prior to our request.
Right. And I don't think, speaking with Denver a little bit prior to this, that it right now, I mean, it takes a little, it's taken a little bit of time because, you know, they're going back. You know, I provided him with some additional reports because ultimately we're thinking about trying to capture what things looked like pre-oil boom around like 2007 and then kind of being able to start at 2007 and go forward and then have this continuing year after year. But really it's just about, you know, being able to, you know, fill in the information in their system eventually. And it's going to be, it's relatively a low, when I say effort, but it doesn't require a lot of additional effort to continue to maintain it going forward because it would just be provided once we receive the new rail traffic reports.
Because I will say on a day like today, I look at it and say, well, this is interesting stuff, but, you know, how important is it? But then, you know, remember, for, it seemed like it was well over a year, we struggled with James Valley Grain down there and how they're going to move their stuff when they get that new facility built. There was the spring when the shipping had gotten way behind because of weather conditions the previous autumn, and then oil was really picking up and taking up rail space. And or when there's been accidents, you know, when these things come up, then it's really nice to have this information instead of first be trying to create it.
Right.
So if it's not a big burden for them, I find this stuff pretty useful. And I look through it and some things, I wonder if it's maybe even overboard. You know, some commodities specifically are pretty small commodities.
Right.
So maybe we could even be less precise on a few of them. You know, hit the big ones. But I can't, I don't have a single suggestion for something else that I wish I had that's not in here. I just think it's very thorough. If there's a flaw in it, it might be too thorough.
And one thing I would echo Commissioner Chrisman is that item three in Denver's commodity traffic report item, it was the monthly variations in rail traffic for specific commodity groups. And while that may be, you know, good information for just one in particular group, but, you know, that's getting into the details and doesn't probably necessarily need to drive, you know, drive down into that level of detail in the report. And that's something that somebody could easily grab this, and then with the fact that they've already got item one on there, potentially item two, and that they can extrapolate that and go drill down as much as they choose to at that point and further their analysis. So if anything, my thoughts on this would be to change, you know, maybe item three may be unnecessary in that respect.
One thing that I don't remember the specifics on it, but I know the point that people can sometimes take one piece of information and really confuse lots of other people with it. And so on the one hand, maybe it's bad to have this out there because it provides a tool for that kind of stuff. But it is nice to have so you can see where they're getting their charts if they're doing it anyway. But you know, one example is you can grab a chart of like rail traffic of some type that originates and terminates in North Dakota and show that there's a certain volume. But that might be very
thank you, Stacey.
Very confusing because maybe there's lots of that commodity that travels here. It just
right.
doesn't either originate or terminate here. So that would be the next chart on the next page. And so, you know, you can confuse people. You can also clarify confusions with this stuff.
I think that, the monthly variations might be, if we get into a situation where crude and oil are kind of competing for rail space, those might be helpful to have, just because you can see, like,
you kind of see what's
yeah, might like be here, much. And then over time too, looking back. But I'm sure they can always add those and run them based on if they have the data. I was curious. One thing that jumped out at me, and this is mostly a question not on how it's compiled, but 2014 is down in so many of the different products. It was curious to me. Like coal originated in North Dakota by rail. If you look on it, it's like the 1, 2, 3, 4, the back of the fourth page. It's almost none. Oh, it's called page 8. If you look, yeah, so the back of the fourth. See that? Why would that be?
It's only,
originated. I mean, so, and then if you look at a lot of the 2014s, they're off. They're down, way down.
Where the heck? Oh, but it's not going out of state.
Page 8 is.
I mean, compared to, or, you know, petroleum is way down in 2014, too.
It's good.
You're good.
So
I would. That's interesting. I don't know if that would just be maybe, and you know, one thing. This is a draft report, so maybe something didn't get analyzed correct in that section.
Because if you look before,
everything
page
is
7,
down.
Food and kindred is way down in 2014 too.
Right.
Well, you wonder. That's height of oil boom. So you wonder if it was it just getting offset?
That's
such a huge amount.
It is.
I mean, look
huge,
at food. Why would that?
Like the oil was taking
but,
up
no, but look at the crude
it, so.
On page 9. Petroleum.
Well, that's way down, too.
Yeah.
I wonder, I mean, in 2014 was also, that was the year that there was a substantial amount of rail delays.
Yeah.
That was the year that they had the large meeting with the grain
regulators. Right.
But I don't know if I would necessarily look at this and take that as gospel just yet, since it's just a draft report. It seems odd that you'd have that kind of anomaly occurring with
yeah.
everything that year. It seems like maybe something...
Except for farm products.
Didn't he mention it was how they measure origination?
Well, I think what that was referring to, Commissioner Krosh, is the section that's item 2, rail traffic originating or terminating in business economic areas. Because the business economic areas, he was saying, those aren't defined by Upper Great Plains. They get that from somewhere else. I'm not sure on the location, but the business economic areas may include some counties in Minnesota. It may include some counties in Montana, just because of how the economic region itself is set up. So he is not able to drill that section down to just strictly North Dakota.
Yeah. Okay. I don't.
If something's funky about 2014.
Yeah.
The metrics that they use, because I don't believe crude oil is still.
2014, it was.
I mean, Apple wasn't operating yet. So.
Right, because if you do look at page 3 on the same charts where those blue bar graphs are at, 2014 is reported as the tons shipped is the highest in from 13 to 17 right now.
Okay, my math skills aren't always the best, but that seems contradictory.
Yeah, that's
right. That so I makes me wonder if there's not something within their yeah. programming that just something got askew there and kind of created that. So. But
well, I don't think we need to belabor this much. I think that you guys seem to like it. Yeah. The way it is, maybe we just tell them we like the format. We'll keep. Let's go ahead with this, and do it on an annual basis. And it might be something that's newsworthy at some, you know, especially if we see a trend.
Right.
I can see doing a news release annually when reporting on the rail traffic terminating originating in North Dakota.
Yeah.
And just as a informational thing. Kind of like how we used to report on the number of elevators we, you know, the total amount of storage right. and all of that sort of thing. Just and then if we do that, we might over time have people who say, "Oh, that was really useful for this reason or that reason," and we might actually find more uses for the data.
Right.
And then we can always post it on the website in this kind of a report that's a little easier to digest.
Agreed with that.
I think, though, that, you know, Denver, part of, I think, what's made him so successful in his career is that, I mean, he just gets things done for people. And if we tell him we like this, I think he takes that as this is exactly how they want it and to put just about any means to make sure he can deliver that. So I just wish somebody, if it's Conrad or you as portfolio holder or Brian as chairman, we're reaching out. If there's some aspect that is burdensome to them
yeah.
unnecessarily, he's welcome to run a bias. Like, could you do without one certain report? It would save yeah. us half the time we spend
yeah.
on this.
And, right. Sure.
It doesn't have to be exactly
right.
Like this. I'm just really satisfied with it. But
yeah. Okay. You want to have that conversation with him, Conrad?
I can certainly talk with him about that and let him know that, you know, we don't want this to be burdensome to their operations and what else they're doing over there. But I will let him know that that the commission does like the report and is looking forward to, you know, working on getting the additional years published as well.
And then when he has 2018, I think he said he was almost done or something.
Right. I got the finalized reports to him from the railroads for 2018, just at the beginning of May.
Okay. So when that comes out, we should do a news release on that.
Okay. Certainly.
If he can let him know that we thought we'd release that information so that he knows that once he's done, get it to us so we don't have, you know, the longer the delay, the less interesting it is.
Right. No, absolutely. I'll work with him on that. And then the only other item that I'm working on is with Canadian Pacific, because as far as their data, and this goes back to, we never really had a, a policy set forth that I could locate to say, all right, railroads, this is what we want you to file in your annual reports to us. So one item that was missing from CP's is the through traffic for North Dakota. So they don't capture on their report just what doesn't stop here but just passes through while BNSF does. So I'm working with them on collecting some of the archive data for that and then requesting them to continue to provide that to the commission on their annual report going forward.
Do you recall what section of code has them reporting this to us?
Yes, I just see it right here. It is jurisdiction, you mean?
Let's see here.
What the heck? It's on our website, right, Stacey?
It would be under, let's see here, railroad. It's under the laws.
Never mind. I'm in the wrong spot. There it is. It is chapter 24-09 is railroad crossings, 49-01 through 17.2 is 49-10.1 is railroad regulation by Public Service Commission.
Right, and I think it might be regulatory powers. It's under 49-10.1-03 and require subpart 2. The commission requires the filing reports and data by railroads as the commission may determine to be necessary to allow it to carry out its regulatory functions under this chapter and other provisions of law.
Being able to share with the public the general percentages, rail transportation is an integral part of North Dakota economy.
Right.
From ag products to oil and gas. Keeping railways safe is important.
Pulp, paper, and allied products.
I could probably do without the clay and stone analysis. 1.2 million tons a year. Maybe that's Hebron brick.
Yeah.
Do they still make
And then this non-metallic, the terminated North Dakota non-metallic minerals, is that frac sand? Because that's 51% of the products terminating here.
That's what I assume, frac sand and... And they bring in a lot of rock for riprapping. So.
Imagine that. That's that. The next amount, the next largest percentage goes to 15%. So of everything brought into North Dakota by rail, 51% of it is non-metallic. So whatever that is, it.
Wonder how much of it.
Everything else pales in consideration.
Wonder how much of it they use for track maintenance.
Well, a lot of rock and stuff.
Right.
For sure.
Well, this is considered to be revenue traffic.
Well, they were rebuilding the lines.
I don't know if their materials for the ballast
would be
considered non-revenue. So this would be just for the revenue terminating traffic.
I just like the fun of guessing what it might be.
It's got to be frac sand.
I believe there is, I've looked it up once, I have to try and find it again, that there is a... Because all railroads report these commodity codes the same exact way. So there is definitions that are applicable to each of these commodity codes and what they actually mean.
You should ask Denver, just so we can satisfy our curiosity.
I will.
What the heck is...
Non-metallic minerals.
Non-metallic minerals, and it takes up... I mean...
Non-metallic.
Everything else that comes into this state pales.
Was that a spike or is it somewhat
consistent? This is 2017, but I wonder what the...
I don't know.
Is that when they were putting that second dual track down?
Yeah, but he's saying it can't be that because that would be non-revenue. That they don't charge themselves for hauling their own stuff, so they aren't making any money on that. So this is...
I mean, I suppose there's like
best theory, though.
The stone that we talked about in the AML motion this morning.
Yeah.
That they ship in for what's called blasting rock or something.
Yeah.
I suppose that came from somewhere.
Well, frac sand is huge.
But frac sand, I'm sure, is the big
thing. The bulk of it, because that stuff strictly comes by rail. I don't think it's...
The similar but slightly different thing that jumps out at me. You know, you look at what originates here... compared to what terminates here.
Yeah.
And we don't terminate a fourth as much, tons as what we originate. And if it wasn't for the non-metallic minerals, it wouldn't even be 10%.
I know.
I mean, we are an exporter.
Period.
Yeah.
If I had a good vein or a couple, you know, like a large deposit of quality frac sand out at the ranch, just so both of you know, even though you're really nice people, you too as well. I'd be on a different kind of somewhere else.
Google defines it as consisting of stone quarries, clay and sand, chemical and fertilizer mineral deposits, salt deposits, deposits of quartz, gypsum, natural gemstones, asphalt, peat, and other non-metallic minerals other than coal and petroleum.
I think that'd have to be the frac sand then. Looking at
Well as fertilizer, right?
That would be under
farm products.
It says chemical and fertilizer mineral deposits. So I'm not quite sure what that means exactly.
Yeah.
I think that would be in its raw form before it's processed into
maybe
the actual fertilizer.
And salt deposits is another one. I don't know if we haul any salt.
We don't bring a lot of salt. There's salt deposits like for under Lake Erie where I grew up. They had huge salt mines that were under Lake Erie for rock salt for roads.
But are we importing like salt for something?
I wouldn't think so. And looking at...
just look at that. That is stunning to think how much sand they're pumping down there.
At one point in time back in the 30s when it was dry in particular, there were farmers out there who were just cursing the fact that their land was so sandy.
Yeah.
They still do.
The first time I bought decorative rocks, I had to say a little prayer of apology to my grandpa. Because I was like, he'd be so ashamed that I'm actually paying hard-earned money for rocks.
Paying money for it when he got it on the farm.
Bane of his existence as a farmer with, you know, like...
We're putting rocks down, they're trying to get them out of the field.
Yeah.
Started doing that, I've got a chute that's a long chute with the mesh wire in it. Mm. You know how rock gets dirt in it around landscaping over time? So I'm scooping it out and running it down the chute. All the soil drops out, you clean rock in the end, then you put it back in. I'm living the dream.
You must need something to do. Because I walk by my dirty rocks every night and don't have any trouble with them.
It's my nighttime project. So. Gotta do something.
What if you run the hose on there, wouldn't it just wash away?
There's plastic underneath. And it's not biodegradable plastic. So.
Yeah, and the dirt would just flow out the whichever is the low end. Over into the neighbor's land.
My air enthusiasm, optimism, whatever it is. I don't know what it is.
Naivete.
Indifference.
I would not be doing this if there were an easy way. Okay.
Well, you could ignore it. That would be easier.
No.
When you're done, come on over. I've got another project you can
just
do.
Get some rocks.
I did this at the neighbor at the lake, nice guy, tears out this big area of rock and plastic and asked if I wanted some of the rock. I said, yeah, I'll take some of the rock for landscaping. And so, but I thought I was going to go get it myself. Well, it just winds up on the driveway.
Oh, no.
And whoever moved
like,
it.
Oh, good. Here.
It wasn't him. They just took a loader and scraped it up, dirt, mud, and all. So I had to separate all that. And it was like, ugh. I'd rather spend a couple $100 buying, you know,
yes.
6-7 yards of round rock versus doing a weekend. But and then I was so afraid again I was going to
over bulk
in the process. So it was just stressful.
Yep.
You pay $30 a ton for rock?
I don't know what it goes for. I haven't bought it. I get it for free, sort of.
He washes it and gets it for free. Free for the taking.
Awesome. Do you have big rocks?
Go rock picking.
Do you have any big rocks? Ooh, how far out of town are you?
Do you have
I'm doing a little landscaping right now, and I'm looking for, like, I mean, you know, something I can actually.
We have the actual fieldstone round rocks, and then the shale flatter pieces.
Are you looking to haul them manually, like yourself?
Yeah, just put them back in the pickup.
But lift them?
Well, I wouldn't.
Or do you have
them? We would have a bobcat for that.
Really? Then all I have to do is roll them out of the back of the tailgate.
They're really small, the ones you can actually manage.
I picked
Those rocks are, I'm shocked. You can't get them very big.
You can't just pick up a very big rock. I know that.
Yeah, no, they're heavy.
I could, before you stop recording, I could easily probably deadlift 130 to 150 pound rock. So now you can stop the recording.
It's on the record.
We'll add it.